So we read the whole of the parable of the lost son this morning. We'll not read it all. But we read at the start of the chapter, Luke 15, verse 1, that there was a large gathering who had come to listen to the Lord, made up mainly of two groups, tax collectors and sinners on the one hand, and Pharisees and teachers of the law on the other hand, the rebellious and the religious. And the Lord tells the parable of the lost sheep, then the parable of the lost coin, then the parable of the lost son, and you're very familiar with it. The younger son comes to the father and says, I want everything that's coming to me. I want my inheritance. I want it now. The father gives it to him. He takes it. He goes away to a far country, and he squanders it all in wild living. Then when he hits rock bottom, he decides to return home. He's nowhere else to turn. He decides to return home as a last resort. He's coming back. He has rehearsed his speech, what he's going to say to the father. And when the father sees him, he's filled with compassion. He rushes out, throws his arms around him and kisses him. And he brings him in. And the father calls the servants, verse 22. And the father said to the servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it, and let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. And meanwhile, the older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked, what's going on? Your brother has come home, he replied, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound. And the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So the father went out and pleaded with him. And he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. And yet you never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. My son, the father says, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And we trust the Lord will add his blessing to the reading of his word. So as we saw this morning, this parable doesn't have really a neat or satisfactory ending. And one of the reasons for this, I suggested this morning, was perhaps so that we could apply it to ourselves and say, well, is this me that Jesus is talking about? Perhaps another reason is this, that you come to the end, as I'm sure you've done reading an article in a book or a page or a chapter, and you're not exactly sure if you got it all. And so you go back over the story. Maybe part of the Lord's purpose here is that we would go back over this story to look and see, is there anything here we have missed? Is there anything that we didn't properly understand? So on face value, it's a story of a father and two sons. The younger son is rebellious. He wants to be free. He wants to be free to enjoy himself without restraint, without anybody looking over his shoulder and in any way holding him back. The other son, the elder son, was a responsible son, respectable, and he stays at home and works on the father's farm. But as we saw this morning, both sons are essentially the same. They want the father's goods, but they don't want the father. Like us, we want God's goods, but often we don't want God. And the application of this, first of all, to Jesus' audience and to us today, is on face value, there are some people that live a moral life, some that live an immoral life, some that choose a lifestyle that's respectable, some choose a lifestyle that's reprehensible. But on closer application, we see that there's a further, or a closer examination, we see there's a further application that this parable can be applied to society, not just to a family, but to society, that all categories, regardless of where they fit in society, need God, and God invites all to come. There is a way back to all categories, all conditions, to God. But there is a further application that I want to emphasize this evening, that it also applies to the Christian church. The Father is God. We are members of his family. But within his family, there are different categories and different characters. And so I want to think this evening, first of all, of the Christian family, then second, of the Christian failure, and then thirdly, of the Christian faith. So first of all, the Christian family. And the family, to be able to understand and apply the characteristics we find in the life of the elder son to ourselves, it's important just to have an overview of the Christian family. And the family is God's gift to us. It's one of God's, if not God's most precious gift. He hasn't created us to be a race of individuals living isolated lives, unconnected to one another. He has placed us in families. And within our families, we share some of the most intimate relationships that's possible, because as members of families, we share the same flesh. We are members of one another. We are parts of one another. And let me mention briefly, and I'll just pass over very briefly, the purpose of the family. Five purposes we find in the Bible for the family. First of all, it provides protection, a haven, particularly for the young and vulnerable, from a hard world. It provides provision for our physical and emotional needs. It provides preparation for life in the outside world. It provides perspective, because within the families, we learn about responsibility, we learn about accountability, and we learn about discipline. And it should provide peace, because within our family circles, we should find a place of comfort and security and love. But as I'm sure you're aware, the family has a deeper and more significant purpose. And when God created the world, he began with nothing. Creation ex nihilo, creation out of nothing. And there was nothing from which God could work, and there was no plan from which God could create it. It was all of him. And so, and it's beyond my comprehension to grasp this, but God, being all-powerful, all-wise, commencing with nothing, could have created a world that is vastly different, a million worlds that are vastly different than the world we know. He could have created humankind in a different format from that which we know and are familiar with. But he chose to create us as we are, male and female, and he ordained the marriage union for the good of mankind, but also to illustrate the gospel. Ephesians chapter 5, Paul is talking there about how a man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. They'll become one flesh. But this is a profound mystery, because I am talking about Christ and the church. And so the marriage union, part of God's creation, part of God's gift to us, is essentially to illustrate the gospel. Christ and the church, to become one. Male, female, Christ and his church, and we become one, bound together forever. And as God ordained the marriage union, God also ordained the family for the good of mankind, but also to illustrate the gospel. Ephesians 2 and verse 19, we are no longer foreigners and aliens, but fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's family. And God calls men and women not just to a new life, but into his family. And the preeminent characteristic of God's family, of God's people everywhere, is to be loved. Galatians 5 and verse 14. The entire law is summed up in a single command: love your neighbour as yourself. To love and be loved. And so God has ordained the family to demonstrate his gospel. He calls men and women into his family. We are to show that we're members of his family by loving one another, to love our neighbour. And as one gentleman asked the Lord, well, who is our neighbour? And the Lord makes this very clear in Luke chapter 6 and verse 35. You are to love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back, and your reward will be great, because you will be sons of the Most High. So this command to love extends to all people everywhere, but especially to those of the household of faith. And how are we to love those who belong to the household of faith? Love one another as I have loved you. You are to love others as you love yourself. So let me ask you this evening. Do you love yourself? Do we love ourselves? Well, the answer to that question is yes, we do. It's not because we're lovable or lovely, because at times we know we get disappointed in ourselves. At times we know we don't understand ourselves. At times we get angry with ourselves. We get critical of ourselves. We get frustrated with ourselves. And at times we might even feel, well, I hate myself. Why did I say that? Why did I do that? But having said that, underline it all, we still love ourselves. And how do we love ourselves? Well, we care for ourselves. We look after ourselves. We cater for ourselves. We protect ourselves. We serve ourselves. We want what's best for ourselves. We do what's good for ourselves. And we work to please ourselves. And that's how we are to love one another. We may not feel other people are lovable or lovely, but we are to care for them and show kindness and compassion and sympathy and work for what's best for them. So here's the Christian family, called out of the world to demonstrate the gospel. How? By living lives of love. So let's go on and consider Christian failure. Christian failure. And the problem, as I see it, is that too many within the family demonstrate the character of the elder brother. The New Testament epistles are roughly divided into two categories. There is, first of all, doctrine, what we believe, and then practice, how we behave. And roughly in these two parts, here's what we believe, and because we believe this, this is how we are to behave. And most of the practical teaching in the New Testament epistles is to do with problems with relationships within the family. This is how, as Christians, you are to treat one another. Not like that, not like you're doing, but like this, with love. So here are two brothers, and they're representing two categories, can I suggest, within the Christian family. Both enjoy the same acceptance. Both enjoy the same advantages. Both enjoy the same access to the Father. On the one hand, you have one category who's obedient, who's loyal, who's engaged in the Father's work. But there are other categories who want to be more independent and who don't like rules and regulations. So you have one group who's stable, dependable, and committed, another group who's unstable, undependable, and uncommitted. And if I was asked this evening, and if you were asked, well, what group do you think you belong to? I'm sure we would all probably say, well, I would like to think I belong to the group that's stable and dependable and committed, and that is good. The danger is this, that then we are prone to the feelings that we find in the elder brother. And there are three things that we can identify in the elder brother that perhaps apply to us. First of all, his formality. He was a respectable and an upright man. He lived a respectable and an upright life. But as we saw this morning, it was all outward show. He went through the motions. He did what was expected. But he had no inner conviction. He was busy with his hands, but his heart was dead. He had no heart engagement with the Father. He had no heart engagement with God. And the danger for us as Baptists in 2016 is that it's possible to learn the ropes and to go through the motions and to know what's expected of us and to look the part outwardly and to be formal Christians while there's no heart engagement. I mentioned this morning John Shear's text last evening, Joshua 23, verse 11. Be very careful to love the Lord your God. Be very careful to love the Lord your God. I can tell you his points, 3 points, 15-minute sermon. Don't be expecting that tonight. Means Christians are to be different. Christians are to be vigilant. And Christians are to be obedient. Christians are to be vigilant. And he made this point. Joshua says, and he's speaking to people who had accompanied him in the conquest of the land, serving the Lord for 25 years. Be very careful. Be very careful to love the Lord your God. And you see, our danger is this, and this is a condition that we easily drift into. And in the pastorate, it's so easy. As I've often said, you're so busy in God's work, you've no time for God. We learn what's expected. We learn our duty, but it can become all lifeless formality. And the life of God, the light of God that once resounded and resonated through our being has gone out. My wife and I were converted on the 26th of February, 1979. Next year, it will be 39 years. No, 38 or something. Over 30. Over 21, is that what you say? And I knew practically nothing about Christianity. And a few weeks after my conversion, a friend took me to a meeting in the Elam Church in Ballymoney. And he introduced me to the pastor, and the pastor said this to me: be careful not to forsake your first love. That's new language to me. Never heard that before. Didn't know what he was talking about, but I know what he's talking about now. Be very careful not to forget or to forsake your first love. At the beginning, you're full of life and joy and love for the Lord. I want to tell you this. We were converted in a Sunday in our own home. And when I went into work the next day, I wanted to sing a hymn, but I didn't know any hymns. And so I sang You'll Never Walk Alone, because we're Liverpool supporters. But I didn't know any hymns to sing. But why did I want to sing a hymn? My heart was just full of praise to God. I knew nothing about God. But I was just full of life. Full of life. And where does that go over the years? We find out I knew nothing. Now I know a little bit more than nothing. I don't know everything. We have grandchildren. They know everything. They keep me right. Our little granddaughter, Kira, is 9 now, but when she was about 4, she said to me one day, "Granda, you have so much to learn." I said, "Thank you, darling." But what happens, and I think this is one of our great dangers in Baptist circles, we become professional Christians, and we look the part. We use the right version, we wear the right clothes, we say the right words, and our hearts can be far away. His formality, we're in danger of this. Secondly, his failure. And I'm going to mention 5 areas where he failed and where we can possibly fail. First of all, he was selfish. He was self-centered and self-promoting. His brother has come home, he's lost. He's away for we don't know how long. He comes back, and all the older brother can think about is himself. He had no real interest in his father or his brother. He had no concern for their welfare. Only himself. Only himself. And This is what we are by nature. We're totally self-absorbed. And this is a battle that we have to fight every day to overcome and to capture and to kill self, because self wants to rule. And our other son's oldest son, Reuben, is four. And when Reuben was 3 years old, they were in our house one day, and I told him to do something. And he says, "Why?" And I says, "Because I'm the boss." And he said, he looked up at me and he says, "Actually," his exact words, "actually, I'm the boss." 3 years old. He wants to rule because he's a child of Adam, a grandson of mine, and he's just a little sinner. Selfish, shallow. It was all outward show. There was no depth to this man. There was no love for anyone but himself. He wasn't even able to be glad for his father. He wasn't even able to be glad for his brother. But he was resentful, and he was envious, and he was unforgiving. And it's not too difficult to look okay on the surface while at the same time having little or no root. And it's when we're put to the test, when we're squeezed, when we're tested in the fire. And the elder brother was the ideal child, the ideal son, the ideal neighbor, until his brother came home, and then the real man came out. And you see, we can all look the part until we're squeezed, until we're squeezed, and the reality can become evident. He was selfish, he was shallow, he was stubborn, he refused to go in, he had decided, or perhaps he had reacted because of his inner condition, "I'm not going to go in, and I'm not prepared to budge." And we can all seem to be willing servants until we're asked to do something we don't want to do. And I know that in my life. I'll do anything you want, and then you're asked to do something. "No, you not give me something more important?" When we're asked to do something we don't want to do, especially if it's to someone else's advantage and to our cost. And the elder brother was selfish, he was shallow, he was stubborn, he was superior, arrogant, better than the younger son. The younger son confessed his sins, but the elder brother didn't see he had any faults. But he's quick to point out his brother's faults. When the father comes out, he doesn't refer to himself. He refers to his brother. Look at what he says. "This son of yours," he's not talking about his brother, "this son of yours has squandered your property, your money, with prostitutes." What a life. Whether this is true or not, we don't know. But anyway, he is not only pointing out the faults of his brother, he takes pleasure. He's gloating. He's gloating. He doesn't take the father into the corner and say, "Is this true, what I heard about my brother? Could this be true?" No, here he is. They're out here in the yard. Servants are about. People are maybe looking out the window to see what's going on. And the brother here is venting his anger. "This son of yours..." And he's good. He's taking pleasure in it, that his brother has failed. And what about us? What about us? Do you ever take pleasure in hearing of other people's failures? Your enemies? Does it please you? Your friends? Your family members, something goes wrong, and did you hear what happened to your cousin? And you have a secret pleasure. "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that." But there is a little gladness there. When you hear of problems, difficulties, failures, do you get a secret pleasure? Why is that? Because it confirms what we always thought, that we're better than them.
I knew I was better than him. And here we see the elder brother is selfish, he's shallow, he's stubborn, he's superior, and he's sinful. Now look at this. Jesus told them, verse 3, this parable. And there are three parables here. And it could be argued that it's one parable in three parts. It's the same story told in three different ways. There is, first of all, the story of the lost sheep. Then, secondly, the story of the lost coin. And were these just preparing the way for the main point the Lord wanted to make, the story of the lost son? But look a bit closer. The shepherd went to look for the sheep that was lost. The woman went to look for the coin that was lost. But nobody went to look for the son. Nobody went to look for the son. So whose responsibility was it? Well, in Jewish culture, it was the brother. The brother. When Jacob wanted to find out about his sons, he sent Joseph, he sent their brother. When Jesse wanted food taken up to his sons in the army, he sent David, he sent their brother. And the responsibility here would have been with the brother. But the elder brother didn't go, or else he wouldn't go. He wouldn't go. Why? Why would he not go? Because he was a sinner whose whole life revolved around himself. And what about us? What about us? There are people we know some, maybe many, who have turned away, who have drifted away, or been driven away. Could the elder brother, we don't know this, but it's an interesting question, could the elder brother have been one of the reasons why the younger brother left? Could there be people who once came here, who don't come here any longer because of us, because of you? We've lived in Larne for 23 years, and I could tell you now many people who once sat in the congregation, worshiping God, out working on the doors, engaged in the Lord's work, and today you could not persuade them to come to church. There's a couple that I know of who once were being so much promoted for Christian work. Years ago, I was going through a lot of old Irish Baptist magazines. Their photograph was on the front page. They were going to go to college. They were going to engage in mission work. And before I came, something happened. I asked them what it was. They said nothing. But you could not. I've tried for 23 years to get them along to a church service. And all has failed. What has happened? You know people like this. People who once came here. And they've drifted away and they're gone. And where are they tonight? Where are they tonight? And does anybody care? Or are we all too much like the elder brother? The younger brother was gone. The elder brother says, I'm going to do my duty. Let him go. He deserves it. He's in trouble. Good. That'll teach him a lesson. There's people in trouble tonight that we need to care about. We're all right, we're still here. We're still engaged in worship, serving the Lord. But it's good sometimes. And I'm more guilty of this than anyone, because we're busy with other things and we allow these people to drift away. And maybe they just need a word of love. We can't persuade people to come, but we can try, we can try. So his formality, outwardly upright, inwardly dead, his failing, He was selfish, he was shallow, he was stubborn, he was superior, he was sinful. His fault is obvious. He was not in the right relationship with the Father. And here is the point. If we don't keep our union and our communion with God fresh and alive and growing, then these characteristics of the elder brother exist in all of us. They'll come more and more to the fore and will choke our spiritual life. So we've considered the Christian family, that we belong to God's family. God is our Father. We are members of his family. Christian failure, that too often within the family, instead of loving one another, we act like the elder brother. But let's just briefly finish by thinking about the Christian faith. And here is our comfort and the glory of the Christian faith. God is our Father, and God has sent his Son to look for that which is lost, souls that are lost. We demanded our independence. We demanded that God allow us to be free, to live without his interference. But like the younger son, we have made a mess of the world. And we didn't know it. We didn't know it. But we were lost. We were lost, blind, lost, and dead in sin. But God sent his Son to find us. And our Lord Jesus Christ left his heavenly home consumed with love for the lost. And in a spirit of humility and selflessness and sacrifice and love, he didn't give up until he found us and he brought us home. So let us be thankful. Let us determine to put to death those characteristics of the elder brother that exist in us. And let us determine to live lives of love and, with God's help, to walk as Jesus walked.